Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for About Music. In About Music, we delve deep into the world of music and bring you the behind-the-scenes stuff. Let me share with you some of the tools from the composers and the performers' toolboxes. I'm very pleased to welcome you back as we explore the minor scale further. You've just been listening to the Rondo alla Turca by Mozart from his Piano Sonata No. 11. This is a fine example of what I call music in primary colors, using both major and minor. In the episode called About Music in Primary Colors, that was episode 9, we explored the concept of primary chords, which are the keynote chord, also known as the tonic, the chord 5 notes up from the keynote called the dominant, and the chord 5 notes down from the keynote called the subdominant. In C major, these chords are C, G, and F, and all three of these chords are major chords. In minor scales, in their natural form, logically, all three of these primary chords are minor chords. Here are some examples played on the piano. Listen carefully to the sound of a major chord as compared to a minor chord. First of all, primary chords of A major. And now the primary chords of A natural minor. Now I'm going to juxtapose them so that you can get the sound clearly in your mind. Major on the first degree of the scale. Minor. Major. Minor. On the dominant degree of the scale. Major. Minor. Major. Minor. On the subdominant. Major. Minor. Major. Minor. The natural minor scale starting on A, like the major scale starting on C, uses all the white notes on a keyboard. When a natural minor scale and a major scale share the same notes, they are said to be relatives, like your brothers and sisters with the same parents. To find the relative minor of any major, you begin on the sixth note of the major scale. So A is the sixth note of the C major scale, they share the same notes, and therefore they are relatives. You can imagine that these scales having the same notes makes it very easy for a composer to switch between them during a piece of music. For the moment, please don't worry about the harmonic and melodic forms of the minor scale. We're talking only of the natural minor scale. The same principles apply even with the alterations. Also remember that I mentioned that most minor key pieces use all three versions in the same piece. Here is a piece by Scarlatti, which I played for you 2 weeks ago. It uses the related keys of D minor and F major. It starts in D minor, and within three phrases the composer has switched to F major. This switching between the major and the minor continues for the remainder of the piece. There was something I did not mention 2 weeks ago that raised a few eyebrows, and I'd like to just tell you about it now. The performance here is performed by Dong Sok Shin on the very oldest known surviving piano. It was made by the inventor of the piano, Bartolomeo Cristofori, in 1720. This piano is in the Metropolitan Museum of Art. There are only two other similar pianos, similar in age, also by Cristofori. One is 1722 in the Museo Nazionale degli Strumenti Musicali in Rome, and the other in 1726 it was built is in the Musikinstrumentenmuseum of Leipzig University. The Scarlatti Sonata is written in 1739. I wonder if one could speculate Scarlatti playing this very sonata on this very piano. Let's listen to it. That was a piece using the related major and minor scales, meaning they share the same notes. But it's also possible to have a minor scale that starts on the same note as a major scale. These would be called parallel or tonic major and minor, and they share some notes, but they don't share all their notes. What is important to know is that the common notes include the three most important ones. That is the keynote tonic first note, the dominant fifth note, and the subdominant the fifth note below the tonic. Because of these important shared notes, it's just as easy for a composer to switch between parallel major and minor during a piece of music as it is to switch between relative major and minor. Here's an example by Schumann. It's the eighth short movement of Papillon. The movement begins in C sharp minor in two short phrases, which are repeated, and then Schumann switches to the major scale starting on the same note. But Schumann, for an unknown reason, called it D flat instead of C sharp, which of course on the piano is exactly the same note. These switches between scales are called modulation, and they make the possibilities of artistic expression almost limitless. For example, I can start in a key. A key is just another name for a set of notes in a scale. Then I can go to its parallel, then to that one's relative, then to the parallel of the relative, and then its relative, and so on. This simple example has already taken me very far from my starting point, like this. Start in C major, go to its parallel C minor, go to that one's relative E flat major, then to its parallel E flat minor, and then to its relative G flat major. And in those five short steps, I've moved from all the white notes to all five of the black notes. I'm just talking about possibilities. It's very seldom that a composer will go to this extreme route. But you can imagine how this opens up the possibilities. Let me give you an illustration to simplify this concept. Imagine you're driving in a car and you need to change direction to get to your destination. All you have to do is find the meeting place of the road you are on with the road you want to be on. In other words, the intersection of the two roads. You drive there on the first road, and when you get there, you turn right or left into the new road. Done. Easy. So, the composer finds a chord that exists in the key he wants to leave, but also exists in the key he wants to go to. So he drives us to that common intersection chord in the old key, he turns the corner, and simply carries on in the new key. Simple, hey? That's exactly what Schumann did in the piece we heard. The dominant chord of C sharp minor is the same chord as the dominant chord of C sharp major, otherwise known as D flat major in this piece. So Schumann gets the music to this common chord in the minor, simply turns the corner, and continues in the major. I must just mention that there are other methods of modulation as well, but let's not confuse the issue, as the one I've just described is probably the most common. There's also another aspect I should mention, and that is that when one looks at the printed music, you will see sharps and flats and other symbols, which mean that the music is possibly changing key. But I'm not going to explore this possibility, because we are talking about the art of listening, not the art of reading. So we want to practice listening and hearing the changes. Now, there are very interesting differences in the way that minor scale pieces behave as compared to major scale pieces. Major scale pieces tend to stay in major keys, whereas minor keys seldom stay in minor keys, and very often they change to major keys along the way, sometimes just for a little while, and sometimes for the whole remainder of the piece. In episodes 8, 9, and 10, we listen to examples of how major key pieces change from one major key to another major key. This modulation is usually to the major key 5 notes higher. Now, minor keys could do the same thing and change to another minor key, and sometimes they do, but far more often they switch to their relative major, the major that has the same notes. That's what we heard in the Scarlatti on the historical piano. I hear you asking, but if the notes are the same, how can you tell the difference? The way to spot this is to listen for a prominent point of rest, climax, or arrival, and then decide if the music leading up to this point sounded like major or minor. You will not be able to tell from just the last chord, but from the way the music gets to that last chord. So as the music proceeds, you are thinking to yourself, does this sound like major or does this sound like minor? And that skill does come with practice. I personally don't like the idea that major is happy and minor is sad. That is such an oversimplified generalization. But if it works for you, then use it. I generally find major keys to be uncomplicated, bright, and airy, and minor keys tend to sound complicated and dramatic, but also a lot more interesting. You could try this method, or you could work out another way that you can use personally to describe major or minor. Another interesting way that minor scale pieces behave differently to major scale pieces is that the minor scale pieces frequently end up using the parallel major, that is, the major scale starting on the same note. Both pieces that we listened to last week did this. They were both in E minor, and both ended using E major. The Moldau changed about two-thirds into the piece for the remainder of the piece, and the New World Symphony changed quite literally at the extreme end, on the very last page. Why do composers do this? The common theory is that this gives a sense of relief after the dramatic tensions created by the minor key. I don't necessarily hold that this is true. Sometimes it just sounds good. In fact, in many instances, in the Baroque period especially, this was left to the discretion of the performer. I remember when I was a student ending a minor key piece with the major chord, catching the examiner by surprise. I watched out the corner of my eye to see the reaction. Instead of getting a negative remark, the examiner appeared to be pleased at the initiative, and this led us to a very nice discussion about the music. If I might digress briefly regarding verbal question and answer sections of music examinations, so many students appear to not understand what it is they have just played, and that is why they become stressed and why the examiner frequently gives a low mark. What the examiner wants to know is whether the person understands the music or did they just play the notes. Did the teacher teach the music or only the correct notes? When a learner shows an interest in describing what they just did, however controversial the performance was, the examiners love it and they enjoy chatting. They also get pleasure from a nice discussion instead of facts repeated like a parrot. This puts everyone at their ease. Let's spend some time with the very famous Symphony No. 40 by Mozart. This symphony, which is in four movements, is in the key of G minor, which is the relative of B flat major. As is typical with symphonies, there is a specific structure which follows a pattern of keys. In this particular symphony, the first and last movements have the same structure, so I will describe the first movement as an example and give you the opportunity to work out the fourth movement for yourself. The restless opening theme is in G minor in four phrases. Then the opening is repeated, but almost immediately you will hear a brightening of the sound as we move into the relative B flat major. A big point of rest comes about on the dominant chord of the new key, and after that the movement proceeds in the new key with many references to the minor key. After 2 minutes, we have that entire opening repeated, and so you have two opportunities to hear the structure. At about 3.5 minutes, we hear a very big climax point, and from here the music goes back to the minor key, but it moves about restlessly. From about minute 4 and 49 seconds, we have the opening repeated, again the four phrases, but this time when they are repeated, Mozart alters the music to stay in G minor for the entire remainder of the piece, which completely changes the character of the themes we heard before. I would like you to just listen to how this change sounds. Here's the original, which went into the major key. Here's the altered version, staying in the minor key. After this point, the piece ends with the minor key, which is different from the two pieces that we heard last week, which ended with their major key. The second movement of the symphony is in a major key, and I want to say very little about it, only that it's in two parts, and the first part ends in the dominant, and the second part goes back to the home key. There's lots of other changes, but we're not going to consider that movement in detail at this time. The third movement is back in G minor, And what I would like to draw your attention to here is that this movement is in three parts. Parts 1 and 3 are identical in the key of G minor. And in the middle part, we have the parallel relationship I mentioned earlier. G minor goes to G major. We have G major and G minor sharing their important home key note, dominant note, and subdominant note. As is typical with minuets, every section is repeated. What you may also notice is that each of the three sections move from the home key to the dominant at the halfway mark and then back. But then you might also notice that the dominant of G minor and the dominant of G major are identical, they're the same thing. The fourth movement, as I mentioned, has the same structure as the first. I'm going to invite you to please try to follow it. Now, the very famous Symphony No. 40 by Mozart. Here's the entire symphony. Thank you. Thank you for sharing the last hour with me. It's been my pleasure to present some of these concepts to you. Please remember that you can always contact me at brian@gsaradio.stream. That's my email address, brian@gsaradio.stream. Time has flown past, but that's all we have time for today on About Music. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to join us again next week as we continue to explore the wonderful world of music.